You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinawi.
Hello.
For episode 8 of the cycling podcast Femina. We've got company today. Ian Cleverly, the editor at Ruler magazine.
Hello, Richard.
Very up, going up in the world, aren't we?
Elevated company.
We'll see.
We brought Ian along because he is a cyclocross aficionado, and we're going to be talking about cyclocross today. And we're also joined by Delia Bettis.
Hi, Richard.
Who is a cyclocrosser.
Indeed,
a cyclocross rider.
Yes.
A champion, no less.
At certain things, yeah. The Three Peaks and a podium at international trophy or national championships.
Well, the Three Peaks is the ultimate cyclocross race, is it not?
Yeah, it's an acquired type of cyclocross race. It's a little bit different to your standard cross race. A standard cross race would be anywhere between sort of 40 minutes and an hour, whereas Three Peaks is more like, you know, 3 to 4 hours, depending on how quick you are, and it's on open terrain, so it's not playing fields like you'd often get. So, yeah, a little bit different to your standard cross race.
We brought you in, Ian and Delia, because we know absolutely nothing about cyclocross. I mean, that doesn't usually stop us, Orla, does it?
I've been researching away, and I thought I could blag it. Now you've blown my cover.
Oh, good. Well, we can test you later. Coming up.
Well, we've got interviews with Evie Richards, the world champion, under 23 world champion from last year, defending her title this weekend in Luxembourg. And also you spoke, Orla, to Katie Compton.
Yeah, 13 times American national champion. Absolutely incredible woman. She spent a lot of her career fighting what she didn't realise was the cause of her ill health. She suffered like chronic leg cramps, which she found out only fairly recently was down to a genetic defect. So the fact that she's managed to achieve what she has battling that ill health is quite phenomenal. She's a tough cookie. She's brilliant.
And we'll come straight out to Katie Compton and see what you did there.
Have you got that written down on your notes there, Richard?
No, I don't, honestly. That was just...
It's the only reason he interviewed you.
That just came to me.
Liar! I can see that building up.
And Ian's looking at me very suspiciously. I don't like that look, Ian. And we'll then hear from Kaisa Thailand, something completely different. She set a new world record last year for distance covered by a woman in a year. She had 32,326 miles, which is about 85 miles a day or something. I went to see her at home in Nottingham last week, and we'll hear from her in the final part. But we were going to start, actually, before we get into cyclocross, just by quickly chatting about something that's very much in the news this week, which is Nicole Cook's testimony, her appearance before the Select Committee of the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. There's an ongoing inquiry that they're holding into doping in sport. Nicole Cook brought a lot more to the table. She spoke about some of her experiences in terms of doping, not personally, but what she's seen, what she's been told over the years, the shortcomings that she perceives in the anti-doping system. And she spoke more about sexism, which isn't really the remit of this inquiry, but nevertheless, it's got big headlines. Top line, I suppose, from her was that cycling is a sport run by and for men. She covered a lot of ground that she covered in her autobiography, The Breakaway, a couple of years ago. But was there anything, Orla, that caught your eye, that surprised you in what she said?
There wasn't really anything, I don't think, that surprised me. Nicole Cook has always been very outspoken with her opinions. And so we have heard what she has to say, I guess, on these things a lot in the past. But that's not to say that what she has to say isn't important and isn't relevant. I mean, there was a very good article written by our colleague Tom Carey in The Telegraph about this, and he was saying that a lot of people might, people who are familiar, I guess, with the story, not the wider public who are coming to it for the first time, but anyone who's followed cycling, sexism, and indeed doping, will maybe read, look at Nicole Cook's testimony and roll their eyes, say, here we go again, we've heard this all before, more of the same, and dismiss her, I guess, because she is quite consistent with her outspoken views. However, it doesn't take away from the importance of what she said. I think it's important to note that she did retire from cycling 4 years ago. Things have changed you would, well, they have changed quite a bit since she retired, certainly since she first started racing and back in Beijing 2008, when she won gold. We're in a different cycling landscape in terms of women's cycling these days, but that doesn't mean that it's not important to address and vocalise what the situation was like in order to continue that change and remember how recently the situation has been very different.
Well, Beijing, if you think back to Beijing, it's quite remarkable to see that there were only 3 medals available on the track for women compared to 7 for the men. That was changed for London 4 years later, where it was 5 and 5, an equal split. But you know, it's quite remarkable to think that so recently there was this huge inequality. And you know, Nicole Cook sort of spared nobody really in her criticism, and in a sense she's right to do so, because the problem is not, it wasn't British Cycling, it wasn't UCI, it was everybody, it was the whole, every institution basically. I mean, if you were in charge of British Cycling and you had a certain budget, Orla, and there were 7 medals available for men and 3 available for women, and your job was to win Olympic medals, how would you have allocated that money?
Well, of course you would allocate it in favour of the men, because that was the landscape that they had. Does that make her anger any less relevant? Well, no, because if you're competing in that scenario, you still want equality and you're still going to fight for it. I guess to talk about it now in hindsight, where we do have parity between the men and women in terms of competition, in a lot of cases we do have prize money parity as well. And that's where it becomes a little bit distorted. Dave Brailsford is one who will often point out to me, maybe off the record as much as on, the Halfords team that was set up for Nicole Cook, essentially, so that she could win gold in Beijing in 2008. And that's something that gets missed off, I think, Nicole Cook's narrative whenever she's telling her own personal story. That was investment that was outside of, and commitment and focus that was outside of the funding that British Cycling themselves had. So, you know, she was given this extra support. But there's a really interesting point, Richard, that you yourself made when you were chatting about this beforehand, which
was off the record. This
I thought there's no such thing as off the record these days,
you
Richard.
Should have said.
Things have changed now. The point you made was the amount of coverage that we will get today, for example, we're sitting here speaking the day after Nicole Cook's testimony. And that's what the newspapers are reporting on. And they'll be reporting on the inequality within British cycling. Will those same newspapers then run the results of women's races? Will they give equal coverage to women's racing as they do to men's racing? And you pointed out that that's the very reason that we started this podcast, was to not so much always be harping on about the issues, but to just get something done, to get out there and change
things.
Yeah,
here we are. I mean, Nicole over the years has probably had more coverage for her grievances than for her achievements, which tells its own story. I do think that Dave Brailsford and Team Sky really dropped the ball badly when they didn't set up a women's team, albeit there might have been not such a healthy women's racing scene at the time. They could have been agents of change in that regard. It would have cost, and this tells its own story, it would have cost the salary of one decent male rider to run a women's team. You could run a women's team for 2 years on Mikhail Kwiatkowski's salary, which is not, that's not a good thing. But I just don't understand why, when they had this affiliation with the national governing body, why there wasn't a women's Team Sky set up, especially when Team Sky was supposed to be about not just winning races at the top level, but also encouraging people to ride bikes.
Well, I spoke to a lot of people within Sky about this when Team Sky launched, and in the subsequent years when there was an awful lot of a clamour, I guess, for a women's team. And what they pointed out was, for a start, they're a commercial. They've got a commercial interest. There has to be return on that interest, you know, if you're looking at the cold, hard cash of it. And as you quite rightly say, the women's cycling scene then was very different even than it's been in the last year. There was no consistency across the calendar. Races were cancelled left, right and centre. And they were saying, it's fine, we could put a sticky plaster on that and create a women's team that's got a shiny logo and a great kit and all the rest of it. But is that helping to change women's cycling from the bottom up? I think that it certainly would have made a difference, and it would have encouraged other sponsors to come on board. And with sponsors, then you get more a wider commercial interest in keeping the calendar consistent and whatnot. And I think it would have possibly been a good thing. But at the same time, you cannot look at a big corporation like that and say it's up to them to change things whenever you've got the UCI, whose responsibility it actually is. They're the ones who should be changing it. And to be fair to them, they are starting to. Mm. It's a difficult one.
There are other World Tour teams that run women's teams, some in particular that actually run them in town. So they'll have training camps at the same time. And to me, it seems like a missed opportunity that Sky didn't have a women's team, that could have massively raised the profile.
Delia, what was your reaction to what Nicole said? And is that still your perception that it's a sport run for and by men?
I think it is it a sport run by men? I'd probably say yes. In terms of it still being run for men, I'd say that I don't want to get on my pedestal about this, but
do
I'd say
no, I do.
I'd say most
get off the sofa and get on the pedestal.
I'd say most of the world is still run for men by men. And so to a degree, cycling is just a microcosm of that. Mm. But I think that the women's scene in cycling is getting stronger and stronger. But the top, like if we're kind of as women, female cyclists are kind of bringing it up from the bottom, if you like, and kind of growing it every year, it gets bigger and bigger and gets better. And you really do see that even at a kind of local and national level, that the quality of female riders that you get in this country now at local and national level is just fantastic. You know, the top end of the national scene are women who are racing abroad. And when it's not an Olympic year, you turn up on the start line and you're racing against Katie Archibald, you're racing against Laura Trott, every now and again, maybe even Lizzie Armistead, which is a little bit frightening. So, but I think that you look at those riders and you look at, say, Sarah Story's team that has now doesn't have enough funding to go forward next year to continue to be a UCI, to the race at the level UCI level that they wanted, that they were racing at last year. And how is that possible? You know, you've got Sarah Story, who is the most decorated Olympian, Paralympian ever. You've got Jo Rauselstrand was in her team. Katie Archibald was in her team. Top of the class cyclist. And yet she's not able to get the money she needs to run that team next year. That's criminal. I don't have an answer to it because I don't know how the industry works on the inside. But just in terms of the talent, I think that women just need to carry on doing what they're doing and keep building up from the bottom up until we break that ceiling.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. Very grateful to them. Now, we're going to turn our attention to cyclocross, as promised. We brought a couple of experts in, or a lot, although you are a half expert now, having Googled it, having read the Wikipedia page on cyclocross. Fantastic. I should say we've had some Orla's energy balls this morning.
We
so
did.
Ian and Delia, totally what's energy. The verdict? What's the verdict?
It's good. I'm pretty sugared up. Natural sugars,
yeah,
of course.
All good, all healthy. Yeah.
It did look like bird food, but tasted great. So, yeah, good job.
I have had a few requests actually on Twitter to divulge the recipe. So I won't bore just now. But if you want to listen till the end of the podcast, I may just let you know how to make these magic energy balls.
Our other sponsor, of course, is Science and Sport, ooh. And I wonder if there could be some collaboration in the pipeline.
Science and Sport, you know where I am. come a knocking, we can work together.
Oh dear.
You see, Richard's so excited by the energy balls and by the prospect of this fantastic new commercial
here.
Collaboration that he's gone and spilt my
water.
My water.
Shall we wipe that up or should we just leave it?
Let's just leave it. It's only water.
It's flooding. I've flooded your living room floor.
I don't drink buckets of water. It's barely 400 mils.
This is turning into a cyclocross course before our eyes.
Oh, wonderful, Ian. That's a great link. Well,
Richard's just worried about how he's going to get off the sofa and paddle through this.
I'm wondering about it. I don't want to get wet feet. Delia, tell us, cyclocross, why?
Why cyclocross? Good question. A question I often ask myself when I'm hosing myself down with a jet wash at the end of a race. It's a lot of fun. and I'd definitely say, you know, compared to going out on the road for 4 hours in the winter in the ice and the snow and the rain, you can do a solid hour of cross racing, and it just is an excellent way in the winter to just kind of have some fantastic top-end fitness and some really aggressive racing. It keeps your skills up. And it's, just, I mean, to just kind of introduce cross as well, for those that don't know it, I know it's a growing sport, so a lot of people do, but you're looking at generally anywhere between 40 minutes and an hour for a race. And it's really kind of fast off the start line, so really, really quick. And it's a mixture of kind of, it's off-road, but you might have a tarmac section and there'll be kind of obstacles and hurdles. So you might have to run up a muddy bank or, you know, descend and then dismount from your bike and then hop over hurdles. Some people can bunny hop the hurdles. A lot of people just dismount and run. And it's just a fantastically varied way to ride your bike, and it's a lot of fun.
Ian, I was going to ask you, I mean, about some of the big races in well, Belgium in particular is the heartland, isn't it, of cyclocross. Tell us what these races are like, what's the atmosphere like?
Off the scale. It's cycling, cyclocross in Belgium is bigger than football. It's televised every Sunday, some Saturdays probably as well, I don't know. Yeah. The women's races are now televised as well, which, and that's quite a recent thing, I'm thinking, last year or
yeah,
two?
I think to be regularly televised is quite recent.
Yeah. You used to get a kind of 2 minute highlights package at the start before the men. This is how bad it was. They would spend 20 minutes just with a couple of talking heads in a studio talking about the men's race and then show 2 minutes of the women's. Well, come on, you know, why not show the women's race as well? So now Sporza, I believe, in Belgium, show the women's race as well, which is great. The crowds they get can be anything from 10,000 to 40,000. They're paying to get in. Bear that in mind. It's probably 10 euros or something.
Yeah,
doesn't cost
a lot.
World
Cup, but
The atmosphere is just electric. Very drunken, of course. It's the full-on Belgian experience. Beer, frites, mayo, all that. Mud, cold.
Well, it's on my bucket list, Orla. I'm sure you fancy it as well.
Totally sounds like my kind of sport. I love the sound of that. It sounds very Belgian and very over the top, just hyped up fun, really, which is my kind of thing.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I mean, the classic one that the Brits go to is in Kokseide, which is on the same weekend as the Ghent 6 Day.
Which was cancelled this year,
which
wasn't
was
it, because of the weather?
Yeah. But that's a great weekend in which you can get two totally different cycling disciplines in one hit. But actually, Kokseide is not my favourite. I think the Koppenberg is my favourite.
Koppenberg is fantastic.
Delia's ridden the Koppenberg.
Yeah. I have ridden the Koppenberg, not with great success, but I have ridden the Koppenberg. And it's a fantastic course because it's basically all on one hillside. So you've got a lot of climbing to do and a lot of descending, and off camber sections as well. And I think that for British fans, it has a special moment in our hearts. I think was it 2 years ago that Ian Field rode there, and he just streaked out in front, not streaked literally, but like
anything goes at the cyclocross, I think.
As I say.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention that part of it, did we? That's why he gets the big crowd. Yeah. Fieldy in the nod.
To choose a better word, he had a really good start, and he just was, you know, miles ahead of the rest of the field on the first lap, and it was just fantastic watching it on TV and seeing him come down this off camber bank just ahead of all of these like top flight riders.
And talking of Brits, Helen Wyman has won it 3 times, I think.
Yeah,
definitely
she won
it
that
two.
Many.
I'm not sure, but it's her favourite race.
Yeah,
she's great.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear from another British rider, Evie Richards, who won in her first ever international cyclocross race last year, won the under-23 world title. I caught up with her recently. She was at a training camp in Mallorca, which didn't strike me as the best place to prepare for cyclocross races, but never mind it. Actually, I think the weather was so bad that it did actually turn out pretty well. Let's hear from Evie Richards. We know you best, of course, for winning the world under-23 cyclocross title last year. That was the first year that event had ever been held. It was also your first international race, wasn't it? It was the first time you'd raced abroad in cyclocross. Tell us about it. And you know, when you went there, what were you hoping for? Was winning in your thoughts at all? Or, you know, what were your thoughts going into the race?
I think when I initially arrived, I really had no idea where I'd come. But as I heard, like, a couple of other people getting results, I think I was bumping myself up a bit more. But I never really thought anywhere higher than 10th place would be possible, to be honest. So to win is pretty amazing. But when I heard the boys coming back and getting, like, top 10s, I thought, right, if they can do it, there's no stopping me having a go at it.
Well, you tell us about the race. I mean, talk us through it, because I think you started pretty far back, but you rode a very aggressive race. You were off the front pretty early on.
So I was gridded near the back just because I obviously hadn't raced abroad yet. So it was pretty minging start and the rain was really heavy. So I managed just to cut a line on one of the first corners, and then I was just taking the girls really one by one. And before I know it, I was coming down the one descent, and to my disbelief, I think I was in first. So I think I just had a really strong start and I just stuck with it.
To win the race the way that you did on your own, having been out front for so much of the race, that's a pretty decisive way to win. And you were only, well, you're 19 now, I guess you're 18 at the time, so you were very young as well. That must have been an amazing feeling.
Yeah, I don't think I really took it in, to be honest, but gosh, when I crossed the line, it was really amazing, and it was really nice to have all my family there with me whilst I won, so it was really cool and a bit surreal.
I mean, that race became notorious quite soon after, because it was the race, of course, where the rider Femke van den Driessche, who was one of the favourites, if not the favourite, was obviously caught with a motor in her bike. What was your reaction when you heard that?
I think it sounds a bit funny, but I went back to where my mum and dad were staying. They were just staying in a caravan on the site after, and so we didn't actually have any Wi-Fi. So it wasn't actually till a couple of days later when we got home, and I watched it on the news, and that's where I found out. But no, I was just really shocked, and I was just felt sorry for the whole of the first under 23 women's race to be sort of like tarnished with that being taken place.
I guess you were surprised as well to hear that it had gone on.
Yeah, I didn't realise that things like that actually could take place. But after watching videos and reading about it in in other disciplines, it was really shocked me, and especially for the age she was.
Was she somebody that you knew about, that you'd had any dealings with at all?
I honestly had no idea of any of the riders, really, apart from a couple of the girls that I raced in mountain bikes. So apart from Ellen Noble, who I followed on Instagram, like being one of those dream accounts that I wanted to be like one day, I actually didn't know any of the girls I was racing against.
That's maybe an advantage. So tell us about, you know, since then, how did the last season go, and, you know, how's this this winter cyclocross been going?
Yeah, so I changed over to a bit of a different plan this year. So we sort of kept a similar number of races, but we tried to do a couple more high profile races. So instead of doing my local West Midlands races, we were out in Belgium, but we were going through quite a big gym phase, so we were working through them and not tapering off. So hopefully come Worlds, I'll be as strong as I can be, but I've had a great time racing in all of them, and they've been really fun.
I mean, you went last year with zero pressure, I guess. I mean, how do you feel looking ahead to this year's Worlds in Luxembourg? Do you feel the nerves starting? Will you feel a bit of pressure going in trying to defend your title?
I think at the start of the season, I felt a lot of pressure just doing just little races, my local races that I'd normally just rock up to late and just chaotic as usual. But I think I've learned that I've had to deal with the pressure over this winter. And I think going into the race, I think I'm going to be as confident as I can be, because I've done as much work as I can and there's nothing else I can do on the day. So just to enjoy the race.
Can you tell us a little bit about cyclocross? Because it is a branch of the sport that some people won't know an awful lot about. You know, the heartland is really Belgium, isn't it? What's it like to race over there? And tell us a little bit about the atmosphere at some of the bigger races.
So I think cyclocross in Belgium is quite cult. So it's almost like football is in this country, and you rock up and there's going to be thousands of people cheering, and there's lots of beer tents and dancing, and it's a bit of a festival almost. So the atmosphere is really amazing, and you're doing course practice in the dark in the morning or late at night with music blasting, and when you're racing there's ridiculous amount of people cheering for you. So the atmosphere is really amazing, no matter what the weather is. They always come out in force, and even if it's just a small race, there's thousands of people cheering for you. So it's really cool.
And you've been training in Mallorca. Is that the best place to train for cold, wet, muddy cyclocross?
You'd be surprised. I think we've had snow, wind and rain here in Mallorca. So we've just been getting road miles in. I've done a lot of the muddy miles at home on the hills over Christmas. So we were planning on getting a bit of sunshine in Mallorca, but it has ended up with a bit of cross weather, and we're on the beach in the rain this morning. So I have managed to get some crossing over here.
And after the World Championships, I mean, I mentioned some of your performances on the road. You were 10th in the Women's Tour Yorkshire last year, very good field. Do you fancy doing a bit more road this summer, or will it mainly be about mountain biking?
Yeah, I did enjoy doing the few road races I did, but mountain biking, I like riding on my own, and I like taking on the race from the start. And obviously in road it's more tactical and it's a longer race, so you can't always do that. So I did really enjoy riding for Lizzie and feeling like I had a job. So if there's opportunities to ride for someone to help them take the win, I'd really like to do it if it's going to help my mountain biking.
Just finally, Evie, I mean, I mentioned cyclocross, you said it was quite a cult sort of discipline. I mean, for a lot of people, it's cold, it's muddy, it's winter, obviously. But you obviously love it. Sell us cyclocross.
You sit in the van probably for 2 hours freezing before the start line, and then you normally sit on the start line for half an hour in the rain, and then you race around a field for 45 minutes, but you finish with a smile on your face. So it's really good fun, although you might sound like it.
I'm not sure you've done a great job of selling it there, but maybe that'll appeal to some people.
Well, brilliant. You can't tease them into it, really. You've got to have a stiff backbone to have a go at it.
So that was Evie Richards, beat a girl on a motorbike to win the under 23 world title last year. Delia, do you know her at all? Have you ridden with her at all?
Yeah, I've raced with her a few times now. She is an incredible bike rider. She's so talented, and I think it's a real kind of trend you see actually in cross and to a degree on the road, that where you've got these strong young mountain bikers. And they come through into cross and into the road, and they just smash everyone to pieces because they can climb, they're fit, they've got the right skills, they're not afraid of bad weather. And as she was saying in that interview, they're not afraid to take the race on from the front either. They're not like, no offence to my fellow road riders, but they don't just want to sit in and then head for a sprint at the end. You know, they really want to race, which is fantastic to see. And also, I think watching her in the World Cups that she's done this year, and also in the race at Shrewsbury last year in the national champs, wherever there's and at Bradford this year actually, wherever there's a running section, you often see in cross races that when you hit a running section, that people just kind of go, oh, this is the bit I now have to get off my bike and sort of trudge up. Evie Richards gets off her bike and she sprints. Her arm is like pumping, and she runs faster than anyone would run without a bike. You know, she really nails those running sections. And so I think she just kind of attacks every bit of the course, and she's thinking about everything. And it's to a degree, I think, it's great that at the national level now, at the national championships, the under 23s have their own separate race, whereas before they used to be mixed in with the seniors, and they've separated it out now, which is fantastic because those riders get recognised as they deserve, they get their own podium, it's good. The slight downside of it is that you don't see Evie Richards race with, you know, Nikki Bramier and if Helen Wyman had been there this year, and you sort of look at the lap times afterwards and think that would have been one hell of a race if they'd both been on the course at the same time. So it's good to see, but you know, she got sixth at the weekend was it a World Cup?
Yeah.
So she's just gonna go up and up. It's fantastic.
She's quite unusual that she's getting so much support from British Cycling to do cyclocross, because as we mentioned in the first part, the British Cycling Programme is very focused on Olympic medals, and of course cyclocross isn't an Olympic discipline. Ian, there has been talk in the past of cyclocross being added to the Winter Olympic programme. Any possibility of that? And would you think that would be a good thing?
I'd like to see it. I don't think it's going to happen, personally. It doesn't. Part of cyclocross's problem, from my perspective, is that it's so popular in Belgium that nobody else gets a look in, apart from Holland.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be a bit, you know,
the Dutch ones,
If you're going to introduce a new Olympic discipline, then lots of countries kind of need to have a chance of winning it.
Unless it's baseball, softball. Although that is still, a bit international.
But isn't that part of the process that the IOC would look at when considering a new sport, is that there has to be a reasonable number of countries that would stand a chance of winning?
Well, it's supposed to be, but a big factor is what money it can bring in, really.
Of course, money. Yeah, stupid move, yeah.
Yeah, but that is, on paper, it's supposed to be how international it is. But we see, as I say, with baseball, softball, introduced for Tokyo, as long as you've got a big enough backing, if you're one country and you're America, then it's all right. If you're Belgium, then it's a bit different.
You know, cyclocross is, cycling as a rule is not a big money sport. And cyclocross is a tiny, tiny little thing, so I'd be very, very surprised.
It's you mentioned though that her skills, and it strikes me as we see in men's cycling, Peter Sagan comes from a mountain biking background, and obviously her main thing is mountain biking, and he's got tremendous skills, bike handling and all the rest of it. That whatever she wants to do in the future, whether be more road, and she's obviously a talented road rider as well. She's just a great athlete. That will stand her in good stead, won't it?
Definitely. And we've seen it as well with the likes of Alice Barnes, so she started off, which I think she always did road, but she was in the GB mountain bike squad, I think, and she was an excellent mountain biker. And she just absolutely dominated the road season last year, crits, road racing, everything. She was just always up there. And she's, just going to go from strength to strength, I think, with drops and wherever she goes after that. So
Nicole Cook as well, of course, was in her youth a very versatile rider. She rode everything, didn't she?
The beauty of riders that come from mountain biking, cross, whatever, they just seem to have a different sort of, a more open perspective to I'll give it a go, Evie said there, if it's got wheels, I'll give it a crack, and that's
I think it's also it's a slight disadvantage in this country, and we see it all the time, but as well with things like people like Stibar and stuff, that people who are good off road end up being sucked into the road scene, and then you rarely see them again, particularly on the men's side. There's more money in it, there's probably a bit more prestige. But what I like to see, and I think, just to kind of big up women on this podcast, is that when you look at the top end of the women's cyclocross scene, is you've got riders there who are very good mountain bikers and they're very good road riders. You look at Pauline, I always get her surname the wrong way around,
Ferran Prevot.
PFP. you look at her, you look at Mariana Voss, also like Nikki Bramia now does a lot of mountain biking. They are just fantastic at all these different disciplines, and they're not afraid to do different disciplines. Whereas, top end road riders, as soon as they go back off the road, I think Cadel Evans tried it once, broke himself. Sagan, really, really wanted to watch him in the mountain bike race, but he just went a bit hard and then punctured. So I think that, women are quite good at retaining that versatility and balancing the needs across the season.
Are you saying women are good at multitasking? Is that what we've come down to?
Multi-talenting, I'd like to say.
Is that as well, though, partly because the men's side of the sport is so professional, there's so much money in it, and the money is in road racing, so you can't really justify to your team going off and breaking or fracturing a bone cyclocross and mountain biking. Whereas for women, because there's less money in it, they can diversify across these disciplines because they don't have sponsors on their back trying to push them down one road.
But that has also perhaps been the undoing of Mariana Voss a little bit, because she's just done too much and burned herself out a little
bit. Well, yeah, but at the same time, the undoing of Mariana Voss is a bit preemptive, isn't it? I mean, she's just come back to cyclocross for the first time in 2 years. Her first race back, she came fourth, even though she started at the back and there were 50 riders. She's just won 3 World Cups in a row. She's a standout favourite for the Cyclocross World Champs. So I think we are a little bit guilty with Mariana Voss of judging her by her own incredibly high standards rather than the standards of the rest of the field, of which she is still a dominant rider. I mean, she just gives me goosebumps even watching her comeback now.
Well, let's hear from another rider who will be lining up at the World Championships, Katie Compton. You spoke to her, Orla.
So yeah, as I said, Katie has just won her 13th consecutive US title. And I asked her whether, I think athletes often don't really have the time to reflect on their achievements as they're achieving them, but whether this one particular achievement, given the magnitude of it, gave her cause for reflection. This is what she had to say.
I think that definitely helps, because I've had so many bad days on the bike where now I don't care. Like, it doesn't affect me because I'm like, well, every day's bad, so what does it matter? Today's a little bit worse than yesterday. So it's like, you just get used to it. And like, luckily I have enough talent and I've been riding a bike a long time to know that, like, even when I'm not having a good day, I can perform well. Some days aren't pretty, but I get it done. And so I think knowing that and having that confidence going into every race, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. If I have a bad day, I can still pull something out. So I think that helps me mentally, where I don't have to have a perfect day. Like, granted, a perfect day would be great, especially I think to win a world championships, I'm going to have that. But like, I know going to the line, if I'm at 75%, I can still pull out a good result. And I think that confidence definitely helps me as an athlete. I'm pretty sure it helped most athletes, you know, just coming in with that confidence, knowing you can do it, despite, you know, how your legs are feeling. So I think that's definitely helped me win 13 national champs in a row, because I just, every race is new, every year is different, and I just approach it like I haven't won before and try to do the best I can.
You have been particularly plagued by health issues, and you've had to battle your own body, really, haven't you? I mean, it's not been easy, these 13 wins, not that they would be anyway, but I think in terms of your achievement, it's been all the more remarkable, really, has it?
It's been quite a few years when I put all the work in and really struggled and really trained hard, and then had some health issues get in the way, where I haven't actually seen like all the efforts come to fruition, I guess. Where now I finally feel like, you know, I put the work in, I put the time in, I did it right. And I'm like, wait a second, now I'm actually riding fast. So that's, I think, the difference, where, you know, it feels good to put the work and time in and actually see the results, instead of put the work and time in and then, you know, have my leg issues or health issues come up and not be able to actually compete well.
Speaking of the competition, the field strengthened, arguably, once again by the return of Marianne Vos, 7 times world champion. She's back in the start line for... she's been missing for the best part of 2 years. What do you expect from her?
I expect her to be riding really fast and really well. I watched her in the Italian World Cup, and she looked great on the bike. She was pedaling well. She was accelerating well. Technically, she was riding well. So, you know, I expect more of that. I know. I mean, I've raced her when she's been on good form, so I know how fast she is. I just hope that I'm faster than I was then. And yeah, we'll see. I'm glad to have her back, though. Like, we need that. Like, she's a great competitor, great racer. I have a tremendous respect for her. So it's good to see her back and feeling good and being healthy, because, you know, injuries and just struggles in bike racing is hard.
I wanted to ask you what she's like as a competitor, how you view her as a competitor. I mean, you rank as the best cyclocross rider in American history. Where do you think Marianna's place in the history books will sit?
She's just such a great athlete, great competitor. And, you know, every race she starts, she goes to win. And I know that. And I think I know she's super competitive. And I think it raises everybody's level. Because, you know, if you're there and you race against her, if you can beat her, it's an exceptional day. So it's good. I really enjoy competing against her. I guess it's the strength that she's racing, but also the respect she gives, too. She's a classy racer, so I think we all need more of those in the group.
Katie, I want to ask you about another love that I kind of picked up from your Instagram account. Mm-hmm. It seems that you have quite a bit of a love affair with tequila. I noticed one bottle in particular that you posted that was produced and bottled exclusively for Lance Armstrong. What was that about? What's the story behind that?
Okay, so I was doing a cross clinic actually in August in Austin, and we went to his bike shop for just like a kind of a talk, I guess. And I knew one of the guys who, I think he's part owner of the shop, but I've known him for a long time just through the bike world. And they had some tequila left over from, I guess, stuff that was produced for Lance. And I just mentioned how much I like tequila, and they're like, oh, we have something to get rid of. So it's one of those just right place, right time, right comment to the right person. And I got myself a nice bottle of tequila, and it's a good bottle of tequila. It's, yeah, it's a sipping tequila you can drink straight. And it's a little bit, a little spicy, I would say. So it's got, it's a good flavor, just a little bit of kick. So I like it. Yeah. We're about halfway through the bottle. We're kind of nursing it.
I'd be hugely surprised and very disappointed if Lance Armstrong's tequila was mild and didn't have a kick to it. I thought it might be a bit spicy.
Yeah, will that be enough.
Will that be your tipple of choice then? Should you make the podium at the Worlds? Would it be a tequila celebration? And also, what, I guess, you've experienced silver, you've experienced bronze. What would be a tequila moment at the World Championships for you?
God, winning would be awesome. Honestly, I haven't thought about drinking lately because I haven't had to back that off some so I could race better, unfortunately. Honestly, I would probably hit the wine or maybe some bourbon. I'm more of a bourbon drinker in the winter. So I might find myself a nice bottle of bourbon and see how that tastes.
With the World Cyclocross Championships coming up this weekend and with Marianne Vos back in winning form after taking the final World Cup round of the season at Hoogerheide, we're looking back at 2006 and the year Vos won the first of her seven World Cross titles. She'd finished 7th and 9th the previous 2 years and was among the outside favourites on home soil in Zidane, despite being only 18 years old. In hindsight, her performance was one of remarkable poise and maturity, and it served notice that she would go on to win on the track, the road and off-road for much of the next decade. For almost all of the race, she was at the front with her teammate Daphne Vandenbrand and three-time world champion Hanke Kupfernagel of Germany. They were engaged in a three-up off-road time trial for much of the 40-odd minute race, until two laps to go when Vandenbrand punctured. That flat tyre played into Voss's hands because from that moment on, she sat behind Kupfernagel and made the German set the pace, knowing that if Vandenbrand got back up to them, the Dutch would have their numerical advantage restored. Kupfernagel, figuring she stood a better chance against one Dutch woman than two, pressed on at the front. Kupfernagel tried to break Voss by accelerating out of every corner. The hard ground made the course more like a criterium circuit than a cyclocross race, but Voss hung in, never allowing the gap to open more than a couple of bike lengths. Even when Kupfernagel misjudged a tight U-bend and had to take her foot out of the pedal, Vos refused to come past her older, more experienced opponent. Instead, she freewheeled so she could stay in second position. And at the finish, as they swung into the road for the final sprint, Vos was exactly where she needed to be. And just as the line was coming towards them, she came out of the slipstream and sprinted past the German, although she did have to duck under a Basque flag being waved by a fan behind the barrier as she headed for the line. Later that year, Vos added the road world title in Salzburg, Austria. 3 years on, she had another narrow victory over Kupfernagel at the Cross Worlds in the Netherlands. But her five other victories have not been anything like close.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Okay, thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. They are offering our listeners 20% off all Science and Sport products. Go to the website scienceandsport.com, enter the discount code TCP20 at the checkout and you'll get 20% off. That's quite good, isn't it? So we heard there just before the break from Lionel Burney with his monthly retro feature, looking back at the emergence onto the world stage of Marianne Vos, who is one of the favourites again this weekend at the World Championships. And we'll be talking about her in a moment or so. And before we heard from Lionel, we heard your interview, Orla, with Katie Compton. I enjoyed the tequila story, her Lance Armstrong tequila.
Yeah, she hasn't had...
a great, I guess, World Cup return since she took a little bit of a quieter season this year, mainly in the build-up to the World Championship. She's won silver before, she's won bronze, but never that gold. And she finished 17th at the weekend, so a bit of a crash. Marianne Vos, once again, dominant. So she mentioned having a perfect day. She didn't have that perfect day, which maybe means that it's still to come. But she's an incredible talent, regardless.
Delia, how's she going to get on? Who's going to win?
Who's going to win
at the weekend? I think the senior race.
Oh my god!
Put you on the spot there.
It's got
sorry,
to be Marianne, hasn't it?
I'd probably put my money on Marianne Vos. Mm. Yeah.
Talita De Jong, the defending champion, is out as of today. She's injured, so she's not able to defend her crown.
Yeah, yeah.
Leaves it open.
Yeah. Ian's probably better on this than me.
Ian's not
going
to win it.
He's probably got a better... you'd be surprised. Yeah, Ian with the right skin
so
suit on.
Dismissive.
I don't think it's a reflection of your talent, Ian, more
sorry.
Your sex, I
terribly,
would say.
Terribly sorry to dismiss your chances in the women's... the women's cyclocross race.
I'm going to go Grayson Perry at the weekend and rock up.
Yeah, actually, I can see that.
Yeah. Voss is going to win. Voss is going to win. Katie Compton... maybe podium, but I'm not totally
I'd love
convinced.
To see Sana Kant actually win it. It'd just be fantastic.
She'd be knocking on the door long enough.
I know. It was so tragic last year watching it. It's just heartbreaking. It'd be brilliant to see her win it.
Do you think anyone of the Marianne Vos on the top of that podium, for that to happen, it would have to be a disaster for Marianne Vos rather than anyone else being able to beat her, essentially? Or is that unfair?
No, I'd say it's fairly accurate. But, you know, anything can happen in cross, as they say. It takes one little slip at that level and you've lost it.
And what about you, Delia? Have you got any more cyclocross this winter, or is the season pretty much done?
Pretty much all the bearings have packed up on my bike, so it's time to strip them down and start again. This is an annual thing. I'm going to wreck my bikes every year. No, I'm done for cross for the year. It started quite early for me because it started with the Three Peaks in September, and I find that when I do the Three Peaks and the national trophies that it's quite difficult to balance the skill set through the season, because you've got to train kind of endurance for the peaks and then somehow come off the back of that with, you know, top end 40 minutes fitness, and the two very different types of fitness, and somehow the likes of Nick Craig managed miraculously do this year on year and still be amazing at everything, but I find the transition quite difficult. So at the moment, finished with the cross and sort of playing out on the mountain bike and getting some nice road rides in as well.
Great. Well, hopefully you can join us on the podcast again. That would be good. You're local as well.
Yeah, local. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
We do have another interview to hear. It's something a little bit different. I mentioned earlier, Kajsa Tylan, who lives in Nottingham, but the name's Swedish. Her family's Swedish. She set a new world record last year for the most amount of miles in a year. She rode 32,326. Quite a lot of these kind of exploits going on, aren't there? People finding records. She broke the record held by Billy Fleming back in, I think, in the 1930s, remarkably. And it was a record that she found that was there for the taking, but hardly easy, because it was about 85 miles a day that she averaged, I think. I could actually work it out. And maybe I will. It's quite a simple calculation, actually. Let me just get my calculator out.
Some of your more professional colleagues managed to work out the dead mileage in the transfer.
I know she was
in Vuelta.
She was aiming for 100 miles a day at the start, and realised that was going to be very difficult. 88.56, just off the top of my head, 88.56 miles a day. That's pretty phenomenal. She got the year off work to do it. And she went about it in a very unusual way. She didn't raise money for charity. She asked people for sweat pledges. It was all about trying to encourage people to do a bit of exercise. And that's an initiative that she's taking on, the sweat pledge. And I think she's got a website devoted to that. So have a look at it. Anyway, here she is telling us all about her year in the saddle, Kajsa Tylan.
I am Kajsa Tylan. I just broke the Guinness World Record for the furthest distance cycled in a year by a woman. I was on Strava and somebody had done a Tommy Godwin ride of like 205 miles and I just thought, 205 miles, that's a really long way. I wonder what this is. So I looked into him and saw the distance that he covered in a year. And just out of curiosity, I looked at what the women's record was, and it was only, if you will, an average of 82 miles a day-ish. And yeah, so I started reading about Billie and what she was doing, and she would end her rides and do like a talk to encourage women to take up activity, and yeah, it was just really inspiring. So I just, you know, when you kind of have a moment, you just think, I could do that. Well, I had been training for Ironman, so 112 miles was the distance. I may have just been a little bit kind of rash in my thinking, but it just didn't seem like a long way. And I knew that with training, I don't think it's something that would be impossible, because if she did it, then surely other people can do it as well. Training and making lists. I've got like over a dozen lists of what I needed to do, and to be honest, the logistical side of it was probably harder than the training. So, you know, I started putting plans in to go abroad, and initially I was going to go right around the Baltic, but decided that was too tricky. I was going to countries I'd never been to before. I had no idea of, you know, what the roads were like and that kind of thing. So I decided to stick with what I knew. Well, my initial plan was to do 100 miles a day. And then I soon realised that was a bit ambitious. So I started off doing 100, and then it got to, you know, a few days in, and it was like, well, my knees are hurting, my legs are hurting. So I would hold back and then think, well, I'll make these miles up in the summer. And then kind of end of March, I got really, really bad fatigue in my legs. I think the muscles were inflamed, because eventually after 3 weeks, I decided to take some ibuprofen and they got better. So I wish...
Doping.
Yeah. I wish I'd thought of that to start with. Just take some painkillers, make the pain go away. But yeah, it felt like I needed to fix whatever it was. And then I started increasing the miles again. Well, I knew why I wanted to do it initially, you know, for the challenge and for the record and all that kind of stuff. And then it became that I wanted to try and inspire people, because, you know, there were people supporting me by doing their own challenges. So, you know, that kind of kept me going. But those times, yeah, I didn't want to give up, because that was never a possibility for me. Unless I was injured or you know, got really ill, then there was no way that I was going to stop. But I did question, why am I doing this? You know, here I am on a bike, you know, little me on a bike in the middle of nowhere, feeling like crap. Why am I doing this? But, you know, you eat some food, you cry a bit, and then, you know, the next day you just think, well, I'll just do it again. Because you do recover a little bit overnight. The initial getting out the door, I mean, I could procrastinate for a long time to get out the door if the weather was really bad or I was having a really bad day. But I would get out, and I think the hardest for me was the first hour or so until you get into your stride. So, you know, we would have such a laugh on some days. You know, I remember because I had to keep this event log. So every time I stopped, I would need to write down what time I stopped, how long for, and why. You know, and so reading back on some of them, you know, one time we stopped for 3 minutes to Google Mary Poppins songs. You know? So I'd signed up for this Ironman distance triathlon in Germany, and so I had two friends doing the swim and the run, and obviously I biked in between. And to start with, when I signed up for it, I was thinking, well, by then I'll be super fit and I'll recce the course the day before, and you know, and on the day adrenaline just took over. And I actually did, it was a two-loop course, and I did the second loop faster than the first, and I was just flying. And the thing that motivated me, which is kind of bizarre, was just my friend Jane. So she was the person that I had to see at transition, and I could just picture how happy she would be if I came in within transition for her to go out and then, you know, run the marathon. And yeah, that was amazing, because you know, I thought, well, I've got through a lot at this point, so I must be like fairly mentally strong, I was thinking. And then to do what I achieved that day, in itself, a day on its own, it wouldn't have been that big a deal. But considering my mental state and my physical state, I was just absolutely gobsmacked that I managed to get around. So that was a real highlight for me. I got more tired, and then the triathlon came around, and that lifted me up a little bit. And I think so it must have been psychological, because my physical state can't have changed. But I felt a bit stronger after that. My physical state was probably the same after about April time. I think it remained the same until I finished. But my psychological state changed. Because if somebody said to me, so do your legs not hurt? And then I'd think about my legs and I'd go, oh, actually, yes, they do hurt. But when I was riding, I just blocked it out. And I just think I got better at that throughout the year, to be honest. Once I'd got past April, I'd say it was probably 70%, if not more, about the mind. It was amazing how much I could ask of it, and it didn't break. It hurt more, but it didn't break. So I would say, yeah, definitely a huge percentage is just mental. The support that people have given me and how amazing they've been, you know, just silly things like, you know, they'd buy me a scone when they came out with me, and it's made me a better person because I want to give back to them. And, you know, I feel like I want to do more for other people because people have done so much for me. Mm. I'm not saying I was a completely selfish person before, but you know, it really has made me think about how much I love my friends and my family. And the three times that I have been on a bike has not, you know, I've not been that great in terms of, you know, my legs were really feeling it afterwards. But again, you know, psychologically, I said, right, this is, now I'm going to get into training and this is what I'm going to do. My body would probably get on with it as well. But I'd rather not be in pain anymore. I'd rather do things that are, you know, pain-free for a while, just to reward myself, if you like, and reward my body for having put it through what I did.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much again to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. Very grateful indeed to them. We heard there before the break from Kaisa Tylan, the, well, I don't know what you'd call her, the marathon cyclist. looking for her next challenge now. And a nice story, great challenge. I think she did what she set out to do in terms of obviously breaking the record and proving that it was possible, inspiring people. And I think her sweat pledge was a nice antidote, wasn't it? You seemed quite animated, folks, about the idea of a sweat pledge.
I thought it made a nice change from, you know, you get people kind of asking you to sponsor them to go and ride their bicycle, which I always kind of struggle with because that's an enjoyable thing. If you're going to ask me to sponsor you to go bog snorkeling or something, then fair enough. But yeah, that makes a nice change.
And in terms of inspiring as well, I mean, I met Kaisa during her attempt.
And you inspired her, is that what you're going to say?
I'm fairly inspirational, I think. I met her at this event in April at Pedal Norfolk. It's a cycling festival, and she was taking part in that as part of her mileage of the day, I guess. And she, you know, she doesn't have the stature of an athlete. She's small. She's very unassuming, very quiet in certain respects. But
like yourself, Orla.
Very, very similar. I find a kindred spirit there. but, you know, that she went on and did exactly what she set out to do is really quite phenomenal. And I think in that interview, you know, she said that from April it became quite psychological and physically she was okay, but she had to keep mentally pushing herself on. And the tedium, I think, of having to do that every single day with no one there applauding you, you know, no adrenaline spikes necessarily. I think that in itself is fantastic.
No, an incredible story of individual drive and self-motivation, isn't it? I mean, she did go out riding in groups, she did the odd event, but there was only one day that she didn't actually ride her bike, and that's because she was ill that day. So, you know, I think we can all imagine that we could all physically ride our bikes every day and do a decent length ride every day. But to actually stick to that and, you know, knock out 85 odd miles a day, that's
no, quite something. I like riding my bike, but that is nuts. I just would be, I'd throw it in a bush for sure. I just get so angry with it. I couldn't do it.
Well, I'm inspired. Once we've wrapped this up, I'm off to do my 85.
Really?
In Ian? One day, though, Ian. What about tomorrow? What about the day after tomorrow?
And the day after that.
Nah.
There we go, guys. You've inspired Ian for today. That's good enough.
It is January, though. We should all have a resolution for this year. We should have our eyes set on some kind of challenge. What is it, Orla, for you?
On the spot. Well, I've got my own personal...
that you're not willing to share?
Well, they're not necessarily cycling related, so...
Are you learning another few languages this year?
Italian and Spanish this year.
Right.
Which I'm hoping will help me at races with international riders. But
well, especially ones from Italy and Spain.
Yeah, not so good with the Dutch, I find.
I'll
try it, though.
What about you, Ian? Any goals this year? Come on.
Yeah, mine's language related as well. I've got to get back on the Spanish. Started it last year and then sort of let it slip somewhat. You know.
Michelle Thomas is the man you want to check out.
Yeah? He'll,
yeah, it's an amazing way to learn a language. Michelle Thomas.
Yeah. Okay. The way that I've got one, because I'm trying to do Italian as well. Ah. We should just form a little group. Yeah. A little language
support
group.
Hang on, is this still a cycling podcast?
Sorry,
is anybody still listening?
Delia, any goals this year? What are your goals?
Well, in addition to improving my currently incredibly basic Italian, I have entered, I've entered the Roc d'Azur, which is a 4-day mountain bike stage race. So we will see. That's in October. So I've got some time to learn how to ride a mountain bike.
Well, we'll get you back on. We'll get you back on to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Might even send you off there with a little recording device.
I'd love it. Yeah. We've got a real crew going out to do it, actually. There's me and Claire Beaumont, who also rides for Vicious, so we're doing it, and a couple of the guys as well. So,
excellent. Let's do that. But
Richard,
we'll speak to you before
don't
then.
Don't swerve. What is your...
I don't have any goals. Nothing.
You asked the question and you don't have any.
I'm looking for inspiration.
To be fair, you've just become a father for the first time. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So I think maybe with all of your day job, little Maxime will probably take up enough of your time.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Your goal can be to be a good father.
Okay.
There you go.
I like that. Excellent. Well, let's wrap up for this month. We'll be back next month, I think, looking forward to the Women's World Tour, season 2 of that. I think we've got an interview with Anna van der Breggen. In fact, I know that we do. I think we'll hear from Tracy Godfrey. I know that we will hear from her actually as well. I don't know why I'm saying that. So we'll hear from her. She's obviously the UCI woman who had the sort of vision for the Women's World Tour. So what's your advice vice president at the UCI? Is that her official title?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of. There's more than one, isn't there?
Yeah.
And we'll hear from other people as well. And you'll obviously hear from me and Orla. But, well, hang on. Before I forget, energy balls. What's happening with them?
You put me on the spot. Where's my phone? I've got...
Again.
Here we go.
Your phone's in that puddle on the carpet. It's still working.
I'll just wipe it dry. So, the big reveal. Dun, 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 dun. If you want to make my energy balls, go for 200 grams of almonds, 400 grams of dates, 4 tablespoons of cacao powder, 2 tablespoons of almond butter, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, and 2 tablespoons of chia seeds. Put the almonds in first, give them a good old whiz, throw in the rest. Bob's your uncle.
What was the final thing?
Chia seeds.
It's the new thing.
It's Irish accent. Chia. Yep.
Chia seeds, yeah.
Anyway, well, that's great, Orla. Thanks for that.
Send us your pictures. Make them.
Yeah.
Put it on Twitter. Let me see it. Let me see the product of your labor.
On Twitter, we are at @cycling_podcast. You're at Sky Orla. Mm-hmm. So please do that. I should also say, if you want to become a friend of the podcast, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. It costs £10 for the year, or you can pay a little bit more if you want, if you're feeling generous. That will give you 11 exclusive documentary-style, radio documentary-style podcasts. First one coming up very soon. And there will be one this year featuring women cycling in some shape or form. We're not exactly sure yet. It might be a writer diary or something from maybe the Giro Rosa or something. But we'll give you more details of that later. thecyclingpodcast.com to become a friend of the podcast. In the meantime, thank you very much, Delia, for joining us.
Thank you.
Hope you will join us again
soon. It's been a lot of fun.
Good luck with the season. Ian, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers, Richard.
Orla, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa. Celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.